welcome to the Morning Magazine for Monday, February 21st of 2022. I'm your host, Ellie Stuckrath. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, CityCast Denver chats with State Senator Julie Gonzalez about plans before the state legislature that would help to address the housing crisis with federal funds. We'll also hear about legislation before the State House that intends to tackle homelessness in Colorado. And we'll take a look at what's coming up on this afternoon's Metro Show. At the bottom of the hour, we'll hear the BBC headlines and then the Hightower Lowdown, followed by Good Ol' CU with Joe Uhas. And as always, on Monday morning, it's Counterspin at 9 a.m., a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. Then at 9:30, Carrie Wolfson will be in the Boulder studio to bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. All that is still ahead this morning, but first, a look at local and regional headlines with KGNU's Benita Lee.
Snow could delay almost 24,000 travelers coming home from the mountains today after the long holiday weekend. Colorado transportation officials expect President's Day travelers to crowd eastbound Interstate 70. Officials estimate that some 16,000 travelers will be heading in the opposite direction up to the mountains. They caution that passenger traction and chain laws go into effect when the snow starts. Drivers going into the high country should be prepared with the right tires or chains. We'll have more on the weather in a few minutes. Government offices and public buildings across the Front Range are closed today in observance of the President's Day holiday, with some exceptions. In Boulder, recreation centers will be open with normal operating hours, but all library branches will be closed. Open space and mountain parks, trails, and trailheads will be open. All Denver libraries and rec centers are closed today. Public service operations in Adams County are at risk due to a delay in financial records needed for an audit. The Denver Post reports the county's finance director, Nancy Duncan, warned that state officials could withhold millions of dollars in property tax proceeds and that millions in tax revenues as well as federal and state grants could disappear. Adams County has sued Treasurer Lisa Culpepper, accusing her office of shoddy bookkeeping. This included a six-month late accounting of $90 million of federal COVID funding. The lawsuit requested a judge's intervention. Culpepper was elected in November of 2018, and her term lasts until January of 2023. The county cannot remove her because of a Colorado statute. Top lawmakers are seeking additional funding from the Federal Emergency Management Agency to pay for removing home foundations damaged by the Marshall Fire. Congressman Joe Neguse, Senator Michael Bennett, and Senator John Hickenlooper stated in a letter to FEMA that foundations not covered through the Private Property Debris Removal Program pose a health and safety threat. They say many of the over 1,000 residents who lost their homes to the fire are uninsured or underinsured. The letter also states that the expensive foundation removals are holding up the community's rebuilding process and economic recovery. Boulder County officials extended the right of entry form deadline again for residents affected by the Marshall Fire. Residents can opt in or opt out of the Private Property Debris Removal Program for homes destroyed by the fire. The deadline was extended to allow more time for Boulder County, Louisville, and Superior to finalize information about project details such as foundation removal and project schedules. The new right of entry deadline is 11:59 p.m. on Friday, February 25th. More information is available online at Boulder County's website. Colorado health officials are advising consumers to check codes on certain powdered infant formulas because of a recent recall. Abbott Nutrition voluntarily recalled Similac, Alimentum, and Elicare powdered infant formulas. This follows reports of Cronobacter and Salmonella bacterial infections, the FDA and the CDC are investigating 4 cases which are outside Colorado. The powdered infant formulas came from the company's facility in Sturgis, Michigan. More information is available on the FDA and the Abbott Nutrition websites. A blast of Arctic air will bring temperatures down today. Chilly temps throughout the Front Range are expected to come with snow on and off through Wednesday. In Boulder, the high today is 45 with a low of 4 degrees this evening. A slight chance of rain and snow this afternoon, followed by snow throughout the evening. An accumulation of 2 to 4 inches is possible. In Denver and Fort Collins, rain and snow possible starting in the early evening. Gusty winds as high as 24 miles per hour are possible in both areas, as well as a high around 50 and a low of 4 tonight. Less than 1 inch of snow is possible. Outside the Boulder studios, it's around 45 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Benita Lee.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. The housing crunch in Colorado is undeniable. A new report published by real estate website Porch.com shows that Front Range cities, large and small, have the tightest housing markets in the country. Centennial, Arvada, Thornton, Westminster, and Lakewood top the list for small and mid-sized cities, with homes there spending a median of only 5 days on the market before sale. For large cities, Aurora ranks first in the nation, and Denver comes in at 4th in speed of home sales. Porch based its rankings on data supplied by nationwide brokerage firm Redfin. While many point to the pandemic as a major factor behind home sales, it's also created what some are calling a once-in-a-generation opportunity to tackle Colorado's housing crisis. CityCast Denver host Bree Davies sat down with State Senator Julie Gonzalez to hear what her task force is recommending on how best to spend $550 million in federal pandemic relief, and how this unique moment has led to some surprising bipartisanship.
For the past few months, you've been leading a task force of state lawmakers in charge of figuring out how to take advantage of what you have recently called a once-in-a-generation opportunity to tackle Colorado's housing crisis. What exactly is so special about this moment? What makes it once-in-a-generation?
You know, we have long recognized that we're in a housing crisis here in Colorado. And yet, given our tax policies, certainly including the Taxpayer Bill of Rights or TABOR, what have you, we often don't have the funds necessary as a state to be able to respond to those crises. And so given the once-in-a-generation funds that we received from the American Rescue Plan Act, we then sat down as lawmakers, you know, Democrats and Republicans, rural, suburban, and urban legislators, to really say, how do we make this money work and be meaningful to really address these deep-seated issues in our communities? And the conversations were great. They were intense, but I actually think that that's good. I don't think that you have to agree 100% of the time in order to have a meaningful conversation with somebody. But the fact that after literally months of conversations with all of these different entities, we came to consensus, which is rare in politics.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not a common thing, but it's unavoidable. We can't ignore it anymore. Right.
Exactly. You know, we were hearing when we were talking to one another, we were hearing from communities in Alamosa who were struggling to support their unhoused neighbors. We were talking to mountain communities and resort towns about their housing challenges for their workers. And, you know, for a long time, we have recognized, particularly here in Denver, that we've got issues. And for a long time, I think legislators from not Denver thought, yeah, well, that's a Denver issue. Good luck with that. And then the pandemic laid bare in their own communities things that maybe had been invisible prior to.
So the $550 million in federal pandemic relief that is going to housing that you all have set aside for housing, it sounds like a lot of money, right? I mean, it is a lot of money, but also housing is incredibly expensive to build. What is the sort of bigger picture plan for this money?
Well, we took some money from that $550 million allocation and immediately put it into direct relief to try to keep people housed in the midst of this pandemic, which is still ongoing, right? And so if today you find yourself at risk of eviction due to the pandemic, or if you're finding yourself worrying if you're going to be able to keep onto your home through foreclosure, there are resources available that can assist you right now today. But then with our remaining $400 million, we've had a lot of conversations as to how best can we support the preservation of and the development of new affordable housing to you know, really address the crisis for the most amount of people possible. And in that way, we were really thinking, yeah, $400 million, it sounds like a lot of money. And then you start looking at the depth and the scale of the need across the state, and you realize there's a lot of different ways that you could spend that quickly and not even make a dent in the crisis. And so we spent our time thinking most about how could we make that money stretch and make that money, in some cases, recycle in order to really help build more housing.
So I'm thinking about this state-level effort. And like you're saying, it's different municipalities all over the state are dealing with some level of this housing crisis. How is that state effort going to work with the local affordable housing work that's already happening? Like here in Denver, the city just published a new policy proposal that they say will incentivize affordable housing construction. What does that look like from the state level?
Last year, we rolled out a pilot program that said to local municipalities, hey, if y'all are willing to start addressing your zoning issues to allow for more creation of affordable housing, we're going to support you and we're going to make grant dollars available. We put $35 million aside. That was also from that $550 million initial allocation. We put $35 million aside to say, let's see if local municipalities are even interested in this. And I'll say we were shocked and really excited by the response that we received, because small towns even that had never really built out a housing plan before, we're like, we really need to start thinking about this. This money would really help us to start putting together a plan. And then you've got communities like Denver, right, who have already rolled out a really robust plan, but they need help and assistance to actually fund the individual projects themselves. And so we want to be able to support those types of projects as well.
And Julie, you brought up sort of one of the really hot sort of buzzwords of the moment, zoning, right? And you hear a lot of housing advocates say that if you really want to make a difference, we need to change zoning laws because less zoning restrictions makes it easier to increase housing supply. Did you all talk about addressing zoning?
Yeah, we were trying to figure out, how do we spend this $400 million and how do we spend it well, right? What's really interesting is that there's actually a policy that was introduced by a Colorado Springs Republican senator who would ban anti-growth initiatives and basically establish a series of consequences for local governments that enact these anti-growth ordinances.
If it was just money, you know, Colorado's got a budget surplus and there's been money thrown around forever, there would never be a problem. But what we have to do is loosen or don't put in place some of the onerous rules and regulations that are a disincentive for builders, developers, property owners to go out and do what they know how to do.
And I think that that's so fascinating because you have a very, very, very staunch conservative from Colorado Springs saying, if we actually want more housing, we need to hold accountable those governments who don't want to allow housing in their communities to be built either. It was very interesting. And so I think that there's going to be a lot of discussion around this here at this General Assembly.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I actually spoke with Senator Larry Liston about that proposed legislation, and it was surprising to me as well, coming from a GOP representative who also is from Colorado Springs.
This might act as some encouragement or incentive for the local municipality to get together with that builder or developer and work it out, rather than just carte blanche, you can't build anything, or it has to be done in a certain method. So it's just it's meant to be kind of a tool that will ultimately help and foster the development of housing.
It had me thinking, do you think that there's an appetite among other Democrats for this sort of deregulation, supply-focused approach to housing?
It's going to be really interesting to have this conversation, because I do think that this is not a partisan issue. As we recognize the depth of the housing crisis that we're in right now, trying to think through what the solutions can be, what those approaches will entail. You know, one of the things that I'm most excited about working on is a pretty new and innovative proposal around building out community land trusts, right? And using these new tools to help bring down the overall cost of housing. And there are lots of different ideas, right? Another proposal that we talked about and reached consensus on was expanding the creation of modular housing, of manufactured housing, which also creates jobs. If we're able to bring down the overall cost of housing and also support the creation of more jobs, that's the kind of innovative idea that we want to really support as a state.
Julie, what happens when the pandemic relief money runs out? Will the state go back to deferring to local governments? Or do you feel like this is the beginning of something bigger in terms of the state supporting local municipalities continuing to tackle this problem?
I think that there was real support, and one of the policy recommendations that we did get consensus on was this idea of building out a standing committee at the legislature to address housing issues. You know, we have a judiciary committee that addresses the courts in our legal system. We have a transportation committee that talks about our transportation system. We have an education committee. We should also build out a permanent housing committee to address these types of issues and treat them with the nuance and specificity that they need.
You've shared publicly that you yourself live in an affordable housing unit. You've navigated those systems. How did that experience inform the work that you're doing now on housing?
You know, I feel like I'm a pretty smart person, and that process was still really complicated for me to navigate and to understand. And I was so afraid that I was going to mess something up. And so what I really want to have happen is, one, let's build more affordable housing so that there are units for people to apply for. But then two, let's make the process easier to navigate so that folks can get connected to the housing resources that they need, right? And so one of the things that came up was that speaking to veterans who are experiencing homelessness is very different and nuanced than it is to speak to someone who just got kicked out of their home because they came out as LGBTQ and their parents kicked them out of their homes, right?
Yeah.
They're experiencing different things. They need different levels of care and support and compassion. And we should have a system that is responsive to everyone in their individual and particular circumstances. That's what we are trying to do, is to actually build a Colorado where you can live in the communities that you work in and that you love. And I think that that will lead to stronger communities.
Senator Julie Gonzalez, thank you so much for joining me today.
Absolutely. Thanks for everything that you do, Bree, and for all of the space that you create for these conversations to happen. It really, really means a lot.
You just heard an excerpt from CityCast Denver, the local Denver daily news podcast. Learn more about subscribing to the podcast at denver.citycast.fm or wherever you get your podcasts.
Colorado Colorado lawmakers are considering two bills to address homelessness. HB 1102 would add veterans as a protected status under the Colorado Fair Housing Act. HB 1083 would give tax credits to individuals who contribute to nonprofits that provide services to those experiencing homelessness. Eric Galatis has more.
A bill making its way through the Colorado legislature would make it a lot harder for landlords and home sellers to discriminate against military veterans. Kathy Alderman with the Colorado Coalition for the Homeless says HB 1102 would still allow preferences to be given for new housing construction and vouchers for veterans. She says the past few years have made it clear that investing in veterans pays off.
You can reduce it significantly. And I think everybody can agree that people who have served this country deserve, at the very least, basic access to rental and for home ownership opportunities, and probably even some kind of enhanced access.
At least one in 10 people experiencing homelessness has served in the armed forces. Veterans frequently face housing discrimination due to stereotypes, including substance abuse and mental illness. Alderman says access to housing is critical for struggling veterans to recover. HB 1102, which would add veterans as a protected group under the Colorado Fair Housing Act, has cleared the House and now moves to the Senate. A separate measure aims to encourage more investment from the private sector. HB 1083 would provide a 25% tax credit for individuals who make donations to nonprofits, including Colorado Coalition for the Homeless, that provide housing, shelter, and services for people experiencing homelessness in urban areas. The credit would be 30% in rural communities.
And that's because our rural areas have traditionally had significant barriers to accessing funding resources. They don't have a lot of government land that can be donated for these types of projects. And so we think that the bump to 30% in our rural distressed areas is appropriate.
Alderman believes the two measures, combined with Colorado Governor Jared Polis's proposal to invest federal relief funds into homelessness resolution, are key tools for addressing the state's homeless crisis.
To making sure that we are getting more people into safe spaces and into housing, and that it aligns really nicely with investments in affordable housing coming from the federal government and investments in homelessness resolution as proposed by the governor.
This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
Coming up on this afternoon's Metro Show, host Miriam Schiff speaks with author Madeline Goldstein about her book, Love in Action, My Daughter's Battle with Cancer, A Mother's Memoir.
More than anything else, the catalyst for writing the book was I wanted to know what Christina did when faced with this horrific diagnosis and an even more horrific treatment. And her courage, her humor, the example, the warrior that she became. I wanted people more than anything else to know that, because people never saw that. I saw it all the time, but other people didn't see exactly how much she endured and suffered and how she did that.
That's coming up on today's Metro Show at 3 p.m. on your community radio station, KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. And that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Ellie Stuckrath. Special thanks to Benita Lee, Bree Davies and the CityCast Denver crew, Eric Galatis, and Miriam Schiff for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for a commentary from Jim Hightower. And then it's good old see you with Joe Uhas. That's just after these news headlines from the BBC.